Okay. Okay. Three.
You say that we have it all figured out, but like...
Two.
This is just our life, right?
One.
Really, I never really analyzed it before.
Record.
I pressed the wrong red button.
Business, lifestyle, and the philosophical implications of business whilst wearing shabby trousers. Or no trousers at all.
So, a big hobo welcome to John Bardos. Hello, John.
Hello, thank you for having me here.
Indeed, thanks for coming back, because it was just last week we spoke to you, and I gather... you're still in the same place, which is Chiang Mai. Isn't that right?
That is right. I'm here for 3.5 months this time, so I'm in Chiang Mai again.
And how did you describe Chiang Mai just a moment ago?
I would say it's the best place on the world for hobos. That's
hobo paradise.
Hobo paradise.
It's interesting. I mean, it's where we met a little less than a year ago. It's also where my hobo journey started, so I can relate to that. But I haven't that much to compare it to yet.
Well, it's like splendid. So...
sorry, go ahead. I was going to sell Chiang Mai a little bit, but actually we don't need any more tourists here. So please go somewhere else. Yeah.
So, guys, today we're going to be grilling Mr. Bardos with questions about his successful hobo relationship. John and Motoko have been married for some years, and they've been hobos together. And they're one of the most chilled out couples I've ever met. So hopefully we can find what their secret recipe is.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's kick off. John, could you just give us a little intro to how you and Motoko started becoming hobos and why you became hobos?
Well, we ran an English school together in Japan for like a decade or so. And it was really exciting for the first 4 years or so. But after a while, it kind of became a little stagnant. We were doing the same thing over and over again. Just our life didn't have meaning. So it was after about the 4 or 5 year mark, we kind of were getting a little bit bored with it. So we thought that like consumption was the way to make us happy. So we went the materialistic route and bought the house and the new car and the stereos and the espresso machine and all that other junk. But we kind of like after another 5 years or so of just consuming, we realized that that wasn't the part that was missing from our life. So basically after years of saying we wanted to do something different or better or follow our dreams or travel more or whatever it was, we finally made a one-year commitment to actually do it. And I made a blog post on my site, and it was like the one-year plan to change countries and careers. And so basically when I made that public declaration that we were going to do it, everything started falling into place, and we kind of put the house up for sale, put the school up for sale, and started making plans to get out of Japan. And that was the start. That was back in, I think we made that plan 5 years ago, and now we're coming on the 4 year mark of being hobos, I guess.
And to add on the reduction approach, which Chris and I discussing regularly, how conscious were you, not in retrospect, in hindsight from now, but at that time, how did you become aware of that problem that you're just describing, that you had so much stuff but it just didn't make you happy? Can you remember what kind of triggered that, or what made you aware of that? How did you decide to reduce the chunk?
I think there was a lot of factors involved. Like actually living in another country is very enlightening and eye-opening. When you're it doesn't happen immediately. You really have to be in a culture for a long time to really experience that. So like it took me, I would say after about 2 or 3 years of living in Japan, like I started finally realizing like everything is different about this culture. And so like all my previous beliefs, all my previous assumptions were kind of just guesses. They weren't really, they were just like a social artifact, I guess. Like my country's way of doing things was not the correct way. It was just a way of many, many ways. And so I started thinking like, well, if those assumptions are different. Like maybe everything about what I believe is wrong, right? Like maybe we don't need to work for a big company and buy a house and work for 40 years to retire. It just kind of forced me to question those assumptions. So I think that's one side of it. And the second side of it is just that, like, I could see the deterioration in myself, in my thinking. Like, it's not a nice way to say it, but the way I describe it is like modern society makes us fat, lazy, and stupid. And I could see myself getting fat, lazy, stupid. It's very easy to go home after a stressful day at work and turn on the TV and drink some beer or some whiskey or some wine or whatever is it, and veg out and turn off your brain for a little while. So I could see myself gaining weight. I was becoming less productive. I've just felt depressed because of the energy levels and because I wasn't doing something meaningful for my life. I just could see a downward spiral. Like I didn't want to be like the fat, overweight, middle-aged, bald guy. I just wanted to be the bald guy. That's all.
Yeah. You're totally excellent. Cool with the bald guy thing. Yes. That's not a problem at all. I see.
All right. Let's steer back to relationships. So, as I was asking you earlier, John, it strikes me that you and your wife are really well synchronized. And I think one of the problems for a couple embarking on a hobo lifestyle or thinking about embarking on a hobo lifestyle is, you know, potential differences in opinions on where to go and how to travel and how long to travel. And it seems to me that like you two are pretty chilled out and you just like, I don't know, maybe you're both selected each other because you both have similar desires and similar kind of goals. And you just, that sort of translates well to how you like to travel and where you like to go. But I'm curious as to, is there any kind of points of friction? And if there is, how are you dealing with them?
Well, like in some ways, we're very opposite people. Like the way we think, like Motoko's not so interested in the business side of things, whereas like I'm maybe a little bit too focused on the business side of things. So I think we have some opposites attract in that way. There's some kind of synergy there just because we are so different. But at the same time, like the fundamental parts of our life are very, very aligned. Like, for example, we like to exercise every day. We eat the exact same food for breakfast every day, fresh fruit and yogurt and oatmeal, just because it makes us feel good. It's just the right thing to eat. We love drinking very high quality, good coffee. So we go to cafes all the time. We have a passion for good coffee. We like live music. We go to concerts together. So there's a lot of things we have synergy. We kind of have different music preferences. So sometimes there's some give and take, but generally like it's not a source of friction. It's just like, just being human, I guess, nobody's perfectly aligned. I guess you just have to kind of give and take. The more you give, it seems like the more other people are willing to give back to you. And I think that works for all relationships, not just as a couple.
Are you all, are you both equally happy in the various locations that you spend time? Like, you know, you're in Chiang Mai now. I'm guessing both of you really like Chiang Mai. But what about if you go to Calgary or say somewhere in Europe? Are any of these locations better suited to one of you than the other?
Like the thing is like, it's not so much location specific. I think that's a key thing here is like, change is always good. I think no matter where we are, we get sick of it after. Like, if we don't want to be in Chiang Mai 12 months of the year. Like we don't want to be here for rainy season and the hot, humid times and the burning of the rice crops at the end of the year. We love to be in Chiang Mai for like 3 or 4 months in the winter. And then we want to be somewhere else. So like, I think the constant moving kind of relieves some of that tension. Like, I think it would be pretty hard for us to decide like one single only country we're going to spend the rest of our life. Because like, I certainly don't want to do it in my home city. And I don't think I'd want to do it even in my wife's home city. And so like, I think there would be, maybe there would be some friction there, but we don't really the thing is we know we're not ready to settle down yet because we don't really know where that destination would be. It's something we have in the back of our mind, but we still don't know where that would be.
That's interesting.
For how long have you been on the schedule that you're following currently with the, you know, like spending a couple of months in the winter in Chiang Mai, and then how long did you take to come up with that?
Well, like the last 2 years, like Chiang Mai, this is our third long extended visit to Chiang Mai. So I think it's like we've been 3 years coming to Chiang Mai like this. Previous to that, like we spent the winter in Turkey and some time in Hungary. The Chiang Mai is only like this exact schedule has only been consistent for, actually, it's not even exact because we went to Hungary again. And so, yeah, we don't have, I don't think we have an exact schedule. We just kind of make it up as we go. But just Chiang Mai is a good place to come. So we try to come here often. And Japan is a stopover on the way to Chiang Mai. So it's easy to visit Japan as well.
True.
How long had you guys been together before you decided that you wanted to travel?
How long have we been together? Well, we've been married for 14 years and we've been together for 16 years. And we've been traveling for 4 years. We were traveling before we were traveling full time too. Like we would travel abroad like 3 or 4 times a year when we were running the English school in Japan.
How long had you guys been together before you fixed this idea that you would leave Japan and take to the road?
Well, the decision to leave Japan was like 1 year before we left Japan, right? We just made that 1 year commitment to drastically alter our lives because we felt we weren't going to change unless we made a big change.
Had it been a subject of discussion long before that?
Yeah, I guess like if you want to know one point of friction we had before, it's like my wife wanted to leave Japan. She wanted to be an English-speaking country so she could improve her English skills. So maybe prior to that 1 year, my wife like got frustrated and was maybe she was more interested in leaving Japan than I was at that time because like it was just a safe, secure job for us. So it was like kind of like, well, what are we going to do if we leave? Like I wasn't against the idea. I just didn't have a plan. And so we talked about like that for like years. And then finally, we just kept talking about it and the issue would come up again in conversations. And then finally, okay, screw it. We made that 1 year plan together. We were sitting down at dinner and just said, okay, I'm going to write a blog post tonight at the 1 year we're leaving. Is that okay? And she said, yeah.
You were having this conversation for some years?
Occasionally it would come up. You know, like, you know, when you're kind of like, when work is not going well and you just feel like your life is stagnating, every once in a while you just kind of feel down and depressed and you feel like you're not doing anything with your life. We had those kind of conversations every few months, I guess, or every couple of months. Yeah. And so when we had those conversations, it's like we didn't have a solution to it. Then finally, we just like after having too many of those conversations, we just said like, let's make a commitment and do it now.
This is perhaps one of the classic hobo couple problems. You might arrive at the decision that you want to take wing and travel at different stages in your life. You know, it might take a while before both of you are aligned onto that goal. And it might be that, you know, one side of the couple is going to be much less interested in the traveling than the other. You know, it seems like you guys fairly naturally evolved out of your situation. And maybe Motoko was a little bit ahead of you in like the idea of leaving the place you're in.
I'm wondering, you kind of selling the traveling as the solution to a lot of the problems that you were facing at the time. How much would you say is the moving around responsible for all the obviously healthy and good choices that you have made and implemented in your life? You mentioned eating healthy and exercising, and I mean that's a whole lifestyle do over. How much of that basically comes from the traveling, and do you think you could sustain the healthy lifestyle in one place?
Well, like there's a couple of things there. Like first of all, like we're not big on travel. We like living in different places, but when we get to a place, we don't move around much. We don't go sightseeing. We don't do all the touristy things. We go to a city to live in a city and like eat in restaurants in that city and go to cafes and go to listen to live music in that city. And like join a gym, and we try to get a routine as quickly as we can. Like we actually don't like traveling so much. The traveling part is actually the inconvenient part of this lifestyle. For example, we were just traveling for a month through Hungary and Europe and Japan, and we weren't able to exercise at all. Basically, we just walked around. We didn't have any chance to go to a gym. We didn't swim. We didn't do any yoga. We didn't do anything. So it was like really good to get back into Chiang Mai and start exercising again. So travel is actually an inconvenience into that. Like settling down, we always have a gym membership no matter where we are. So if we stay for even just a month, we typically get a gym membership if we can. If we were to stay in one place, we would have the gym and we'd have our normal work routine and we'd have our same kind of healthy eating of food. It's nice to change things up and be in a different city, in a different place and meet different people and have different cultural norms around you. That's the most interesting part.
Yeah, I can agree to that. How do you relate as a couple and as individuals to the crowd that surrounds you, like to the other, like to the locals as well as to the other permanent travelers that you're meeting along the way? How does that work?
Well, there's, I guess there's two sides to that. One is that like because of my blog and I interview a lot of the digital nomads and I kind of have a lot of meetings, like it's pretty much every day I have meetings with different kind of people. So that's kind of my stuff. But as a couple, we're always together. Like even when I go out for lunch or I meet people, like Motoko is generally around. There's a little bit of a difference there. Like I guess there's the me part of it, which is like the jet set citizen part and the working part. And then, but we're always together as a couple too. So we meet a lot of couple friends and we meet people. So it's, I guess there would be like when we go out to lunch, we're always eating together. We always are together. We go to the gym together. We're always around together. But at the same time, I have these occasional things where it's like blog related and like Motoko will do her own stuff while I'm doing that. So, basically, we just kind of, yeah, we basically do the same stuff all the time.
Can I get Motoko to hang out with Cowdy when we come to Chiang Mai?
All right.
So we can hang out together. Can the girls play with the girls and the boys play with the boys?
maybe. I think another thing, too, is like Motoko and I are not young anymore. Like we're not like 20-year-old people coming for our first kind of trip abroad and stuff like that. I think like maybe we have different expectations and different ideas than like a 20 or 22 year old traveler that's kind of coming to Asia and seeing a foreign culture for the first time. Like I've been living abroad for whatever 17 or 18 years now. It's been a long time. So we've done all the partying and all the backpacking and the guest house stuff and all that. So we don't really have that kind of aspiration anymore. So it's like there's no more, I don't need to compete with anybody for the quality of my experiences or how many stamps I have in my passport or how dangerous stunts I'm doing on my motorbike in Chiang Mai or anything like that. So I think like we grew out of a lot of the things that maybe the problems that cause stress for maybe younger couples. Maybe that's presumptuous or pretentious, I guess. But I think that's part of it.
You'd know yourselves quite well. This is another artifact of being older. You figured out what makes you tick and what doesn't.
When we first got married, we had like my wife is Japanese and I'm Canadian, so we come from different cultural backgrounds and language was a barrier. And there were a lot of issues that had to be overcome, right? Just like every new couple, like when you merge two individuals together into a shared life, there's going to be a lot of friction and compromise necessary. But yeah, we got through it, I guess. And now that's all gone because our life is the life together, not the lives we had before.
So here's a key question. What work are you both doing? Are you working on something together? Are you both doing location-independent work? Is one supporting the other? How does that work?
Well, like in our school, we worked together for years. And like I had, once I had like the teaching side of it, Motoko had the business and the admin side of it because we were in Japan. So she did all the taxes and the accounting, the bookkeeping, all the legal stuff. So before it was kind of switched, like she was doing the business side of things and I was doing the teaching side of things. But now kind of like with the freelancing work and stuff like that, I think most of the freelancing work is my work and Motoko assists with my project. She hasn't found her own kind of, for example, she loves photography. So she takes photos and does all the photos for social media and then the blog posts and stuff. So all the photos you see are her stuff. So her kind of passion is photography. It's not a business for her, but it's like it helps with my work and the site. And we also work on English teaching sites together. So we have that kind of work we do together. So I think Motoko supports me in a lot of ways, I guess, which I'm lucky. Maybe Motoko gives more than she takes on the work side of things.
Well, it sounds like you've both had experience of working together. Now it's like maybe you've got slightly different roles. Yeah, I guess one of the standard problems people are going to have is maybe somebody's got a job somewhere and the other person's kind of a little bit more location independent, and that's going to be a little bit of a tricky situation to turn into a hobo lifestyle because one person's kind of got roots. But it sounds like you both were doing the school together and decided to quit the school together. So it gave you both a very clean break to move on.
Yeah, we broke the same thing at the same time. So it was like, maybe it was easier than couples with two different separate careers.
Like sometimes couples meet and then they start to travel, like in Motoko's and John's case. And then there's other couples that might meet on the road while one is traveling or maybe while both of them are traveling. that's, yeah, that's different situations to start off. But with John and Motoko, it seems to be pretty well synchronized.
I have a little hypothesis as to one of the ingredients to John's secret sauce.
Okay, bring it on.
So John was already overseas when he met Motoko. John was already, I don't know exactly if you could say the word hobo, but he'd already broadened his mind by being in a different culture, learning a different language. And I think that's perhaps one of the key ingredients is, you know, he'd already kind of enlarged his scope of what the world was. And that, I think, brings loads of upside in terms of how kind of tolerant one is, especially going somewhere like Japan, where the cultural rules are really different from Western Europe and North America. So I imagine that kind of created a certain amount of, you know, tolerance and flexibility. Then I think perhaps one of the other ingredients is, as John mentioned, Motoko was very interested in getting into an English-speaking country. I imagine, you know, if like John had gone to Japan and met a girl who was like not interested in speaking English, or, you know, if you go to Thailand and you meet a local girl there who kind of wants to stay with her family or something, you know, I imagine that's going to be a much harder situation to launch into a kind of couple hobo life. Whereas John and Motoko have those two key ingredients. I just want to add that. I think we've established two possible ingredients to John's secret sauce.
Seems to be this component of one person is more on the it's more leading and one person is more following, and that might change from time to time depending on what kind of business, if they work on the same business or if one person has a business and the other one supports it or whatever. There's different mechanics that come to work depending on how that is structured, right?
Well, and I think like a big thing with our life is like we're pretty happy living very, very simple and very, very cheaply now. And so like work is not the driver of our life anymore. Like we do like a lot of other kind of projects now.
Can we swap wives, John? Like a wife that's kind of happy with a simple life and not spending all the husband's money on shoes and bags and whatever. I think you struck gold there, John.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, keep her.
Yes. Okay. I'll tell her that, yes.
What about having a family on the, and doing that lifestyle? Do you guys think that's possible? What kind of issues do you see, and what's your opinion on that, John?
I think it's possible. Like we know like Jan and Helene, a Dutch couple that just had a baby. We know like Brandon Pierce, he's got like three young girls and stuff. So we've met a lot of travelers on the way that have children, but like you obviously need more money. You need a little more stability. You have to be homeschooling, so you have to put a lot more effort into your children. So there's a lot of extra work and sacrifice. But that's just like having kids. I guess you have to put in that work and sacrifice no matter where you are. But it's doable. But it's much harder to like. I think it's harder to be a couple than it is to be single, and it's harder to be a family than it is to be a couple. But it's definitely doable. We have lots of examples of people doing it. Motoko and I decided a long time ago that we didn't want to have children because we love kids, and we love because we taught kids. We had like hundreds of kids in our school that we've taught for years and kind of grew up with them. But that was enough. We like other people's kids, not our own.
If I can chime in on the kids thing, certainly. There's this sort of de facto way of thinking that, you know, children need stability. They need to be in the same place. They need to go to the same school and have the same group of friends. And there's a certain line of thinking which just seems to kind of be implanted in everyone's minds. I'm not really sure why, other than the fact that that's basically how most people have been brought up. Because in my own situation, I moved four times before I was 18. I changed schools several times. And I think it was great. You know, I maybe didn't like it so much at the time. I was a bit resistant to all the changes when I was a kid. But, you know, with hindsight, it was a really, really useful change in my life, being made to go through different situations. I really wonder, because I have met friends who've kind of got kids and who've traveled with kids. And I'm sure, you know, if you go to Thailand or somewhere, you know, rent is cheap, where local labor is cheap. You know, you can have like a kind of maid and a nanny for like the fraction of the price of if you're living in London or something. So I think there's maybe lots of upsides that, you know, nobody knows about because it's kind of a fairly unusual situation. I get the sense that kids are a kind of blank canvas. You know, they sort of will adapt to whatever situation you put them in. You know, they're not so set in any particular way. And although, you know, they might be a little bit resistant about changing certain things, on the same token, they're also resistant about, you know, going to bed at 8 o'clock most evenings. So I don't have kids myself. I might completely do a 180 on this if and when I do. But it strikes me that just as John says, as long as you've got a certain financial level where you can afford things, I could see that there'd be lots of upsides to traveling rather than it being, you know, too much of a extra burden or a problem.
We live in such amazing times, just that to have this flexibility to travel and observe different cultures. But I don't know what it's like in the UK or Germany, but I could see in Canada, especially American, like, they call it the helicopter parents that, like, kind of protect their kids so much that the kids don't do anything. They don't experience anything because the parents are always guiding everything and sending them just to, like, after-school study courses and all these kind of hobby things. And kids don't get a chance to do anything on their own, right? Basically, they're always being watched over and protected. But, like, going to Hungary, for example, is kind of a middle ground. It's like the kids have a lot more freedom there. Like, I know, like, my cousin's, it has three boys, and those boys, even when they were like 2 years old, like they have a big, like, whatever swimming pool with like 1 meter of water, and the little kids are jumping in there off the diving board and doing somersaults and things, and the parents say, yeah, go play, right? Like, that kind of stuff would never happen in the West. Like, and even things like, oh, my kid has to be in bed by 7 o'clock, they have to maintain a regular schedule. Like, when we're in Hungary, like, the kids are around until midnight or 1 o'clock. If they're tired, they pass out on the couch, and you don't need all that structure and rigidity in your lifestyle. The word you said, like, adaptable, and coming to Thailand is, like, insanely even more on the extreme side of that kind of argument. Like, you see children with their parents working in these little tiny shops all day long, right? Some go to school, some don't go to school. Like, it's just like They're surviving, doing things that are absolutely, like, you wouldn't even imagine would happen. It would be illegal to do that in Western countries, never mind.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So, and not only kids. You know what, like, the amazing thing about Chiang Mai, you see dogs riding on the back of motorcycles with the dog's paws are on the driver's shoulders and hanging on to the driver while the driver's driving a motorcycle. There are dogs. There are dogs that are so adaptable that they can friggin' ride on motorcycles with their masters. It's insane. If dogs can do it, children can do it. I'm pretty sure of that.
That's it.
I also saw that and was quite surprised by what kind of irregular times you'd see children out with their parents on motorbikes or whatever in Southeast Asia. That's there's no, as Chris mentioned, this 8 or 9 o'clock go to bed kind of rule. It doesn't really strike me that that's how they roll in Asia.
And like, I'll make two more points there. Like, the most well-adjusted and outgoing and good, well-behaved, intelligent kids I've seen have been traveling kids. Like, you cannot be a whiny little brat if you're constantly roaming around to different countries. You just can't, because, like, the parents can't tolerate that. You can't get everything you want all the time, right? Even the kids have to learn to make compromises at a very young age. So it's a stress test for the kids, and they have to adapt because there's no other way that the traveling will survive. The other thing too is, like, part of it is bad. Like, especially in Southeast Asia, where you have, like, lots of poverty and lack of education. So, for example, children, the value of going to school and education, maybe it's not well understood, or putting your kids to bed and making sure they have a good night's sleep and they're protected from insects or animals and stuff. Those kind of things, maybe they don't understand some of that. So there's some, I think there's an education component to it. But also, like especially in Europe, right? Like, just for, like, a 10-year-old kid to have wine at dinner with the parent, like, that's a pretty normal thing to happen. But, like, that, like, if you give your kid a half a glass of wine in Canada or America, that's almost child abuse, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I always remember my brother was always drinking when he was, like, 7 years old. He quite liked trying, like, beer and wine. And my parents always seemed quite happy to oblige.
And, like, of course, you don't want your 7-year-old kid to be an alcoholic, but, like, there's something to be said for allowing children to experience and do things on their own.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I think tying it back to what we're talking about, I think this is maybe one of the sort of hobo upsides, because if you're kind of traveling around, you're in different cultures, you're in an unconventional environment, things like this are going to have less of an effect.
If you don't want your kids to drink, explain to them that alcohol is not that good for them. And don't drink yourself. Set an example, for Christ's sakes.
Or let them have the experience themselves. I mean, explaining as to younger people, or I mean, like, we got explained so much stuff when we were young, and we still wanted to try it, and we wanted to have our own experience with it, and then come up with our own decision. I think one of the problems, though, that is underlying the thing, and disclaimer, I'm also not a parent yet, but most parents, when they become parents, they are very unfinished adults themselves in a way. So they haven't figured out or got rid of some of the issues they have themselves. And then with the children, that puts on a mirror to their behavior. And that's can be very discomfortable and maybe a little, you know, schizophrenic, lead to schizophrenic behavior in a way.
Yeah, we're all making it up. That's the thing that I think, no matter if you're running a business or you're traveling the world or whatever, we're all making this up as we go. Nobody has all the answers. Anybody who claims they do is full of shit, if you ask me.
So, gentlemen, any closing comment or remarks on relationships?
What do you think about the situation that single travelers have and how they can relate or not to relate or build relationships whilst maintaining this kind of lifestyle?
Well, I was a single traveler. And I guess John maybe was a single traveler.
Yeah, I guess I was once a long time ago.
I don't know if that, I don't really count. I guess both me and John met our partners in Japan when we were living there rather than traveling. So
so we're not the most competent to answer these questions.
Well, in a sense we are, because I think me and John are, because we were both in foreign countries. We weren't meeting native English-speaking girl in the place that we were familiar with. We were both in a different culture, meeting a partner in a different language. And so I think, you know, in a sense, we are within that kind of target group, which you just mentioned. And I think for me, different from John, the joint goal of getting out of Japan hasn't really been shared with my girlfriend. It's been, you know, she was very happy living in Japan. Her plan was to live in Japan. You know, she didn't have a big goal to see much of the world beyond going on holiday. So I think that's a classic problem of a single traveler. Go somewhere, meet somebody, that person wants to stay there, whereas the traveling person, maybe this is the first place or one place in a series of places they want to go to.
Well, like, my perspective is that, like, being single must suck as a traveler, right? Because it puts a lot of pressures on the people. Like, I think, like, especially for women, I'm just guessing here, but I would say that single women travelers tend to stay single. They don't have any kind of relationships on the road, typically. I think percentage-wise, I think that would be true. And on the male side of it, it's just like they would be short-term flings with locals, and it'd kind of be, there's so much pressure for, like, the young men to hang out in bars all the time and drink all the time because they're trying to pick up the next conquest, right? That's a pretty tough lifestyle.
I guess,
yeah, it's true.
There is the idea of living somewhere and meeting somebody and staying somewhere versus, like, the travel. I mean, if you're talking about people who are traveling and going from place to place, then, yeah, I think what you're saying, John, is very much the case, because unless two people happen to be going to the next destination as well, basically you've only got a limited time window to be together with somebody. Although that being said, I'm sure there's cases of people who meet while they're traveling and they have such a strong connection that they change their plans so they can stay together. I guess we might even include ourselves in the category who have ended up with locals.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. My intention was to live in Japan long term rather than hobo around. The hoboing was more of an accident. And I guess you and Motoko lived in Japan together for a while, so perhaps we're not really in that category. So, chaps, I think we should wind down now that we've grilled John with some questions about his secret sauce and maybe established two of the ingredients.
I think so.
Yeah, I think we've got two there on the list. Go and travel to Japan and marry Motoko.
Yes.
Pick the right woman.
Well, key thing, I think like the fundamental parts of our life are we're pretty set. So like we like to exercise, we like to eat healthy, and we like music and we like coffee. We have those commonalities, and the other stuff is completely different. But like we have those main commonalities, so I think it keeps us together.
And John, you mentioned that you are living currently in a one-room apartment. I asked you about that prior to the conversation, and so there's no time at times when you kind of need some separation, or how do you deal with that? I mean, like, what would you not do together, or do you consciously take or intentionally take time off, basically, and do something on your own, or Motoko does something on her own? How do you deal with that?
We don't take time away from each other. We just don't have a need to do that. I don't know. Like, I don't know where that comes from, but the only thing is, like, I'm a little bit more of an evening person, and Motoko's a little bit more of a morning person. So like, she tends to get up earlier in the morning while I'm still sleeping, and I tend to stay up a little later while she goes to sleep. So maybe that's the time we're a little bit apart, but we're still in the same room, I guess. It's not
okay.
Yeah.
Well, for example, one of the issues that I'm sometimes facing with Anke is that being together the whole day, it's sometimes hard to make a switch from the day and the working stuff to the evening and the, let's say, free time. So there's a lot of things that doesn't really get separated. So we often have, for example, it just happens that then, like, at night, we start talking about, or things come up that we from work, and then that gets mingled together, and that sometimes is a little stressful. It would be easier sometimes to leave that behind, and if you are kind of in the same location and hanging around together, then that's sometimes hard to separate.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I guess, like, we tend to be hyper focused and we shut off things very quickly. When we go out for something to eat, for example, we're not talking about work and stuff. We're just like it there and enjoying what's happening there. I guess we try to be in that moment that we're in, I guess.
There you go, Chris. John and Motoko have just figured it out. It sounds to me they have the experience, and they have really overcome all the typical issues and all the typical problems and found great solutions to that. I mean, it really sounds that way, and I think that's cool.
We'll be publishing the recipe in the show notes.
Okay, yes. I guess from the outside, maybe it looks different than from the inside, but like I never really even thought of it like this. Like, it's like, I don't know. It's surprising that you say that we have it all figured out, but like, this is just our life, right? I never really analyzed it before.
It's like one of those, like Pat Metheny or some really top musician asking him or her about their technique, and they're like, well, I don't know, I just kind of like playing the guitar and I practice a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome.
Whereas everyone else is like banging their head against the wall. It's like, I can't do this, I can't, why, man?
How the hell is he doing it? Yeah, it's awesome. Thanks so much for sharing all that wisdom, relationship with them, with John Bardos.
Thank awesome. You very much. Yes, yeah, it was indeed. Great talking to you guys.
Another amazing podcast magic production.